Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Well, today's show is, I hate to admit it, a bit of a last-minute one, although I've been thinking about it for weeks. In my show planning, I try to be a few weeks ahead of time and put together shows that I feel like will make a unit, especially since we're working with specific topics over these months. And I've been musing about symbols because that's the topic of this week, and for sure has been another subject of a lot of controversy and for sure a lot of speculation. And I would say speculation is more than the controversy involved in the symbols. I've been trying to imagine finding some of the people that I have talked to in the past about symbols and not having much luck in locating them. So I'm going to have to really do a head scratcher and come up with some brilliant ideas. Meanwhile, here's the show today, and because of my limited, limited capacity for concentration these days, I am doing the show again myself, so I hope you don't mind that I don't have somebody to talk to. I sure miss it, and I will be back again next week with an interviewee. Meanwhile, I'm going to introduce this topic of symbols. When my grandmother would talk about symbols, she was speaking of the three symbols that were taught by her for second degree. And each of these symbols had a specific function, a specific duty or responsibility, or perhaps focus, and that's what we used the symbols for. She didn't teach a kind of list of how to use them. She felt that as people matured in their second degree practice, that situations would come up or circumstances would come up where they might be guided or be inspired to use the symbols in a certain way, and then after that, be able to let that go and come back to inspiration again should another situation arise. I think that was a very old-style expectation, and of course now there are books with lists of things that you can do with each of the symbols, and there is also a question of what about other symbols, and were there other symbols that Mikao Usui was given, and these were not passed down to us through Hawaii Otakata. So I will try to address some of these questions, and we'll explore some of them more deeply later on in the month. First of all, the history is not clear about when Mikao Usui actually received these symbols in the first place. The first time that symbols are mentioned in the story was when he was in a trance, and he saw symbols in rainbow bubbles, and they were gold. And when he saw them in the trance, he knew inside of himself what they were for. And I think that each one of us has had an opportunity in our lives to pick up a tool or pick up something. Maybe it's a piece of cloth. Maybe it's a plant. Maybe it's a rug or some creative endeavor that we want to embark upon. And we don't know what it's for until we pick it up, and then all of a sudden we have this insight, oh yes, this would be great for, or oh yes, this will really help me in doing this task. And I feel that this is the beginning of the kind of feeling that Mikao Usui had in his trance, where he was given in that moment the insight of how to use the symbols. Now, I don't know how many symbols he received in this way. I just know that I received three through my second degree teaching with Hawaii Ōtākata. And these three symbols have given me an amazing array of gifts. And they still are giving me gifts over and over. And I am not bored with them. So I don't have I've not been given other symbols, either through dreams or in my own meditations or in my own treatment. And I have not sought other symbols because I haven't felt like I needed them. What I have been given has been, number one, a very interesting practice of using symbols. And that's what I'd like to speak to in the beginning today. Very shortly after I began to practice second degree, especially after 1980, when I began practicing in a much more disciplined way, I asked the questions like, well, where did symbols come from in the first place? Like any symbol. And how does man use symbols? And why are they important to us? You know, when I was a child, I was very fascinated by archaeology and thought perhaps I could be an archaeologist someday. And I realized that I have a lot of qualities that I think would make a good archaeologist. Like I can be totally fanatical about systems and about the way to clean a certain thing so that it looks and isn't disturbed and so on. So I could do that, but I don't know for how long. This is my thing. So I never did get into archaeology, but in that interest, I've spent a lot of times in museums and have read many, many books on different symbologies. Religion is fraught with symbology, and I have always wondered about, you know, where did man first discover the cross, for instance, and why was that meaningful? And maybe some Jungian psychologist or something, or people who study symbols could answer this question, but it intrigues me. It's like, well, for sure, it's a natural thing to happen, like when kids play in a playground, you know, I don't know, I used to remember making crosses with sticks for a number of reasons. But I don't know if that's because I've seen them in church and in patterns, in fabric and so on, or if somewhere in mankind's very ancient memory, there's something meaningful about two sticks crossing and that intersection, the strength of that intersection. Because, you know, when we cross something, that makes the two sticks both stronger than what they would be alone. They've become more than the sum of their parts. And the same is for the circle. And what happened, where was the inspiration to put a cross in a circle? And was that something that came out of the natural habitat? Was that a vision that somebody had? And why did it come back to something that was for them a central part of their spiritual outlook on life, their spiritual beingness as human beings? And then, of course, we're mostly familiar with what I would call the Christian cross, which often is a cross that has one leg of the cross much longer than the other, and then the horizontal piece being equidistant. And that's very different than the Celtic cross, for instance, which is each leg of the cross is, or arm of the cross, is the same length. And they can be very ornately decorated. So the Celtic cross and the Christian cross, and then there are many, many other kinds of crosses. Where did that come from, and why is it connected with our with a spiritual context? I can imagine that the circle, for instance, that's been noticed in petroglyphs all over the world, or the spiral that's also in petroglyphs all over the world, was a representation of the sun, or of the path of life as it moves and seems to repeat itself over and over again. Where did mankind reach inside of himself to bridge whatever he's bridging with these symbols? And for me, in my own very limited understanding and knowledge of symbology and man, it is this bridge between what I would call our relative universe and our absolute universe. This seeking for a bridge from what we know in our everyday life to the mystery of creation, to the mystery of how does it all work, and to the mystery of what's going to happen next. So mankind, and I will use that term very generally and not in a gender way. Sorry, that was my phone. I feel that this question really relates to how we are presented with the symbols in second degree. So, they were given to me as a kind of matter of fact, like this is just how it is, and these are the symbols, and there was no talk about mysticism or occultism or the kind of philosophic questions that I'm asking now. They were just like, these are the tools. Just like somebody handing me a broom and saying, this is the function of the broom, this is what you do. So she handed me this piece of paper, my grandmother, with these three symbols on it, and she said, this is how you use them. And so I did. I used them. And at the beginning, as you may or may not have heard in my own story, they were given to me when I was 28, and was told to send her a distant treatment every day. And, I did that for a while, and then, of course, I forgot, and then I got busy, and then, it didn't happen. And then my grandmother would call me up and ask me why I hadn't sent her the treatments. And I could number one, figure out how she knew I didn't send them, so that was kind of magic. But the other thing is that I didn't feel anything, like I didn't think that it was really working, so I often wondered why she wanted me to send her treatments. And of course, for her, it was more of a test of a student, and also a support for her, because she really would have, we all could use distant treatments every day. So then when I entered the practice wholeheartedly, after attending classes and receiving teaching from her on an intellectual level, I realized that this gift that she had given me was really amazing and somehow mysterious. So being the kind of person that I am, I went to these kind of philosophic questions, and of course I didn't dare ask her about them, because that would have not been appropriate. She was the kind of teacher where you didn't ask questions. You accepted what she gave, noticed what she did not give, and practiced where she took you, and then she would say, and let Reiki teach you. And Reiki did teach me a lot. So when I used them, when I first started using the symbols, I realized that I was doing a kind of technique. And very soon, I realized that this technique took me into a place where nothing else in my life had ever taken me. For instance, when I realized, when I was sending distant treatments, that I could actually be with the person like I was there physically almost. That was, number one, a little scary. Number two, because it was a little scary, I kind of pushed that part out of my mind and thought, well, this is normal. This is just a natural thing to happen. So a lot of the questions that came up for other students didn't come up for me, because for me, I just ignored that part of myself, I guess you could say. And when that part of myself was awakened again, because my students, my second degree students, started asking me questions like, well, how does this work? And why does it work? And, you know, what's this symbol doing? And where did it come from? And, well, is it Japanese? Or is it, you know, is it really a symbol? Or whatever, I realized that I needed to know more. So I started to do some research in the actual symbols themselves. And luckily, or maybe this was Reiki working, this was about 6 or 7 years after I became a master, which was in 1979. A really wonderful experience of having several Jungian psychologists come and take the class for a number of reasons. And they were totally intrigued by the symbols. And a number of them were in the class together. I think I had 3 or 4 of them in one class. And they kind of took it upon themselves to do some research with the symbols, which I felt like was pretty interesting. They discovered that all of three symbols were really, that the shapes of the symbols had appeared over and over and over in ancient man, the ancient recordings of mankind. So on cave walls, on the shapes of old buildings and temples, in writings, like in the Egyptian hieroglyphics and so on. I mean, shapes are very interesting, and when they're repeated, there is an interesting energetic to the repetition of these shapes. Well, of course, one could say, well, isn't repetition just obvious? Because aren't there a finite amount of shapes in the universe? Well, this is a whole other question that we could talk about and I suppose have great discussions about. But why, my question is, and this is perhaps not even answerable, is why is it then that some shapes get repeated over and over again in cultures that seemingly have no connection, have had no connection, and yet the symbols have a very similar meaning, if not function? And I'm fascinated by this question. And when I realized that these symbols showed up in many other cultures, then I was fascinated by where did the symbols come from. So what I tell my students is that the symbols have come from an ancient library of our human consciousness, and the human consciousness that is connected with symbols. And that Mikao Usui received these symbols, and he received the way that they were to be used in this practice. Now, because they are universal, both across cultures and also in the depth of culture, like from like recent cultures to ones that are thousands of years old, I don't know what the function was in those cultures. We just have these symbols with this particular function. So the Japanese phrases that are associated with each of the symbols are actually not the title or the name of the symbol, but is actually just simply a description of the function in Japanese for this particular practice. Now, you can say that that's splitting hairs, but I feel that it honors the symbol in that we don't really have a name that will go down through the ages, and the Japanese phrases are definitely a way of describing its function in the system. So to transfer that over to the name, well, that's another interesting question, like how did things get named? So, for instance, I have a lamp on my desk, and it gives me light when I turn it on. But, you know, in the old days, lamps were oil, and you lit them. And maybe in the, you know, like, is lamp a description of the object, or did it used to be a description of its function? And I think that's another interesting process, because a lot of the students that I have say, well, are these Japanese phrases as sacred as the symbols? And that is another interesting question, and one that I can't really answer. In my teaching of second degree, I talk about the sacred and secret nature of these symbols, which is, I think, part of the controversy at this point. And that I'd like to speak to. You know, Hawayo Takata used to say that these symbols were secret and sacred, and she burned the symbols when they were written on paper, and she burned the practice sheets of all of her students. And it was a way of honoring the symbols. I don't know where that came from, but again, it's a very ancient way of working with what would be called sacred symbology. And it is because the symbols somehow evoke a certain energy, and that invocation, when it's burned, is returned back into the ocean of the universe, if you can imagine this. So we draw out from the universal energetic a certain, possibly, this is my theory, a certain quality, or we connect with a certain function of that energy in manifesting a symbol, and when we burn it or release it from our consciousness, then it goes back into the ocean of the universe and returns as energy until it's made manifest again. So this opens up another whole myriad of questions, which I'm not even going to go into. But you can see that just this function of having these three symbols and what it does and what they do in our practice, what the function is of the what the function is in our practice, leads us into all these questions that have to do with the mystery, have to do with what is our function in this universe, and how do we create the bridging within ourselves and within our different realities to be able to straddle or to bridge these worlds and do it consciously, like with choice. So that's the other thing that these symbols are very, have a great, that's another gift of these symbols is to create timing. Like we can choose when to send a distant treatment. We don't have to wait for the right phase of the moon. We don't have to wait until we're in the right frame of mind. We don't have to wait until the other person is in a certain posture. We can make an agreement with that person that we're sending the treatment to any time of the day or night and send that treatment at that time. And that's our physical choice. That's something that we can choose, that we can actually command a certain kind of energy to be made manifest is an amazing function and is one that we as human beings use all the time. We just aren't aware of it. So the further and further in that I got into my second degree practice and then, you know, initiating people and being in this realm of teaching the practice also, I realized that part of the miracle or the gift of second degree is simply a matter of choice. And that in order to use that choice, I wanted to use it with clear mind, clear intention, and clear consciousness. So that means I send a treatment, or I use the symbols, the other symbols, when it's appropriate, when I've been asked, or when I have permission, when I know that I can have my presence be known. I don't do it and then consciously dismiss the idea. It's like making an appointment by telephone or in person, and I try to remain conscious of my commitment, so I send it at the time that I say. If I don't, then I call and say, I'm sorry, I forgot. And it brings me to the brink of a lot of questions that I would love to have another lifetime to explore. But I realize that as I use the symbols, these questions are being answered. There's a place where now, after 30 years of using these symbols consciously, that I have a deeper understanding of where they're taking me. About 25 years ago, I started calling them keys. They were like keys to another realm of being. They were not in this my physical realm, where the only way that I could give a treatment was by putting my hands on somebody physically. I was able to send a treatment. I was able to be in a place where I could manifest other different forms of energy within a treatment, both hands-on and sending a treatment. And I felt like I stepped into another realm of human being. Well, what would I call this realm? I don't really quite know right now. I still don't have words for it, but for sure there is a understanding of a dimension of us in our universe of time, what I call time space. And this means that if we're really one, and that's what every practice takes us to, is being in the one in some way or another, then if when we experience the one, then there is no separation. There's no space and there's no time. There's no space and there's no time. So have we as human beings, for our own protection, for our own protection. I'm trying to find another word, but maybe protection is the right word, of our own mind, like how much we can actually comprehend. We separate into space, like I'm at a distance and you're at a distance, so we're not connected, which actually isn't true. We may be separated, you and I, on the relative world by a few miles or by thousands of miles. But right now, as you're listening to my voice, we are present together. That space, those miles, don't matter. If we just sat and took a few moments, well, maybe we can just do that right now. We'll just sit and just for a few moments, we'll put our minds into a kind of space where they're sending out a tone, any tone, it doesn't matter. Like it could be in the form of a certain color or a certain musical tone or a certain image. Any of those, and we send that out to everyone who's listening on the radio show today. Will we receive it, or will we just feel like we're one? So let's just try that. So we're going to start now. And we're reaching, and we're reaching. We're connected. Could we be one? Are we one? We are one. We are present with each other. Take a deep breath. Now, to listen to the rest of the program, do we have to pull that energy back? Do we have to pull that toning back? Do we have to pull that color back into us? Or can we simply extend that and feel the connection that we have with all the listeners today? That particular willingness of our mind to expand our beings and to accept connection with other beings is our way of, we could say, taking up space. But in a very different way than, hey, you're taking up my space. but more in the way of, we're taking space. We're expanding each other so that we connect with each other. Doesn't mean we flow into each other. It doesn't mean that we surrender ourselves into each other, but somehow we are connected, and we are connected not just to one another, but to the same source, whatever that source is. We can call it God, Reiki, prana, whatever the word is that you want to use. There is in mankind a certain feeling that there is oneness somewhere, and that we've come from one space. Well, what about time? Well, time is the same thing. You know, our clocks and our calendars and everything are great. They're man's invention, so we can meet each other. We can have relativity in our time zone. Otherwise, and I have to say that I'm really one of these people, time just eludes me. And since I have been in chemotherapy and in this other mindset, this other reality, You know, time just is totally an illusion. You know, like having these, you know, weekly meetings on the air is an amazing process for me, because it's like the still point, this metronome of every week having this place to be with you and to meet you. And it's kind of a still point because it's unflinching. You know, I don't get to say, oh, let's change that to, you know, Friday at 3 o'clock. No, Bert, the man who is being my engineer right now, he's just really there as a metronome every week. And he reminds me that I have this show and that I need and I want and really to get it on the air. But, you know, this is our space of meeting. That's its function. But let us not forget that it is our tool to come together and meet. It's our tool to make a phone call and be sure that we can actually talk to one another. It's our means of marking our birthdays. It's our means of marking the end of an event with relative time. But in truth, well, anyway, this is my feeling. In truth, I am everything I ever was. I am everything that I ever will be. And I am everything that I am now, right now. Now, the question is, can I access that? Well, you know, I don't know. I think that it's possible for me to access it, and it's possible for me to do that through this practice, whether it's hands-on or it's through second degree. And it's one of the gifts of the practice is to be able to access all these different multi-layers of me. So it's not just, you know, layering of the perspective of physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, or physical and spirit. It's also everything that I have been. If my soul is infinite, then I am infinite. If my memory is infinite, then I am infinite. If my vision for the future is what it is, then that's what I am. And it's interesting that in our own languaging, we have these little sayings like, well, if you want to know what a woman will look like in 30 years, look at her mother. And, you know, in a sense, that's true. But it's not just looks. It's like, what is it that we pass down through our genetic and what I call kind of emotional and spiritual genetics, what is it that we pass down to our children and to what have we received from our ancestors and from our own parents? And where does that appear in us? You know, what moment in time will that appear in us? And I feel that all of this, all of these questions, all of this opening to even the consideration of the questions come from my practice of Reiki, and come from the combination of my first degree and my second degree practice. And it's been opened up by the use of symbols. Now, you know, in first degree, we could say, well, there are no symbols. And, you know, in the teaching of this practice, that's true for me anyway, that there are no overt symbols. But, you know, I just wonder, and I ask this question of you, are symbols only forms on paper, or forms that happen in our mind, or is there a symbol of hands touching bodies? Is that a symbol? And what does that mean to us as human beings? Like the tactile sense of a mother's hand on a child does everything. Heals, comforts, wounds, and connects in a very deep spiritual and mystical way, these two beings. A mother's touch is a very, very amazing symbol for me. And what happens when we touch with Reiki? Are we creating another kind of symbolic touch? The touch that is not parental, the touch that is not wounding, the touch that is not loving in the sense of sexual, a touch that is different, a touch that's healing, that's accepting, that's comforting, that's connection. And for me, the symbols of this practice can be found on all of our different levels of senses. So one of the things that I've been doing lately is to really look at my practice and to look at my relationship with symbol and to see what this practice gives me. Is it just, and I say, I don't mean the word just as being littler, but is it simply the three symbols for second degree, or is that calling our attention to symbol so that we can see it in our everyday life? One of the things that's a fascinating question for me is, excuse me, you know, I don't know if you doodle, but I doodle. And I lately have been very interested in my doodles. Like, what are the shapes that I doodle in? And why, you know, is there some kind of unconscious mind thing that's happening? I would imagine that people who do Rorschach testing or something like that could tell me. But I often doodle by drawing circles, and they are always connected. Somehow, circles connecting, whether they're in a flower petal pattern or they're just in some amorphous shape that happens, but they're circles and circles and circles. They each have their own boundaries, and they each have their own, I would say shape, but they are all in connection, and that connection forms a larger shape and a larger shape and a larger shape. So that's one of my doodles. And when I get that done, then what happens? I fill them in. What does that mean? Well, these are all interesting questions. I'd be very fascinated. Maybe those of you who have gone to the Facebook page and talked with Mamta about different things that are happening for you, triggered by the radio show, can share your doodles, because sometimes I wish I were a sociologist. I think this would be a great study. Like, do we all doodle the same way, and what do these doodles represent, and are these shapes archetypal forms? I just believe, and in my own sense of who we are, generally, I feel that the symbols that we received in Reiki are these archetypical forms that have come down through our ancientness and our connection with the mystery. And perhaps, so far back, we were one with the mystery, and there was no mystery because we weren't separated from it. And somehow we got separated from it, and one of our connectors back into being one are symbols. And that though we have functions that seem to be healing, specifically healing, in this practice, that that a larger that a larger function of the symbols is to actually introduce us back into being one with the energy. And in that momentary being one with the energy, we have the possibility to manifest that oneness in other parts of our lives. So, you know, when we use sometimes the symbols in our desperation for altering our outside life, for getting a parking place, or for changing the weather, or for changing somebody else's mindset, what we're really doing is we're really wanting a way to be one with the parking place so that it's there. We're really wanting to be one with that person that we're trying to change, because otherwise, how are we going to influence them? We can't. We can't influence somebody else outside of ourselves, but we can certainly influence somebody inside of ourselves. And, you know, it's an interesting horizon to be able to see beyond the function of the symbols to what are they really teaching us? What is their gift? And how can we be open to receiving? See, one of the things that I feel that is very interesting in just symbology as a whole is how well am I prepared to receive that symbol? So I think about my early days as a child, you know, and growing up in a Protestant church and seeing the cross. And our cross was just simply a cross. It didn't have the figure, the human figure of Jesus on the cross. And that cross meant a lot of things to me. It meant love. I don't know why. It meant love. It meant sacrifice. It meant pain. It meant surrender. I mean, there were a lot of qualities that I could project maybe onto the cross and it could answer back. I don't know. And then when I became more ecumenical and visited more churches, and of course living in the Southwest, I'm presented constantly with what I would call a Catholic cross, which has usually the figure of Jesus on it being crucified. And that personifies those qualities into a human being. And what is it that is speaking to me? You know, and it is my ears. And I use that term very loosely in the sense of that it is my ears that listen. So what am I prepared to take in? Do I have a context to understand the symbol and to place it into somewhere in my life where it actually has meaning? When, you know, you see the drawing of two hands stretched out, like touching a body, is that a symbol that you can relate to now as giving Reiki? Is that the first thing that comes to you? And what are the qualities of being that you associate with those hands? They're not hands in prayer, hands together, but they're hands out with palms down. That's another universal symbol that we are putting a lot of energy into right now. We do that every day on ourselves and on others, and that symbol will become filled with some energy. And what are the listeners, so to speak, what are the listeners receiving? What are we receiving? And what is the greater gift in that symbol? What is it that we are bridging? And what are we going to? And is it more that we're going to a part of ourselves that we have? Well, I would say yes. But can we name that part of ourselves? I don't know. I can't right now. So this is, for me, the general feeling of a lot of questions, not so many answers, and a lot of response that is evoked very deep inside of me when I think of what my relationship is with the symbols of this practice and with the symbols of my life. What an amazing gift. I surely didn't look at the symbology in my life until I really began to have a more mature relationship with the symbols of second degree. You know, I think it's really marvelous to have the time and the energy to go deeply into the shape and the form of the symbols and to be able to find their maybe historical perspective. What is very interesting for me is, where are the symbols taking us? Where are the symbols taking us inside of ourselves? Where are the symbols taking us in our lives, in our everyday lives? And what are the horizons that present themselves as we use our symbols? Well, we have 5 weeks in this month, I saw today on the calendar, since this is the first. And so I am happy to have 4 more weeks to present to you other interesting conversations about symbols in our practice. This is not an April Fool's joke, because in the United States that was a big thing when I was a kid, April Fool's. I'm not quite sure where this came from. But this is, in all seriousness, a very important day. It's one of those days where we hang on the precipice of, are we fools to imagine that the world is only what we see, what we feel? Are we fools to think that we are all that we can be? Are we fools to imagine that there is nothing else except for who we are? And you know, the fool is a very magical figure in the archetypical realm and is also the wise, innocent, and playful creature. I like to hold that image as we enter our exploration and conversation in symbols. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.